appreciate Sean and others holding. I'm going to go to your calls here in a moment. Matt Bracken's riding shotgun with me. A really smart geopolitical analyst, one of the top terrorism experts I know because of his accuracy, best-selling author, enemiesfarandomestic.com. Follow him on X. Matt, this is a short segment. Some stations don't carry it, but I talked to you during the break. You agreed with me overall and said this is, just goes from bad to worse. Trump clearly is getting ready for a ground invasion. What is your overall view of this?
Yeah, a ground invasion would be just unbelievably stupid, destructive. It brings to mind, there have been many documentaries, a Mel Gibson movie made. There was this movie before. It was called Gallipoli. That was in 1915. The big scheme was that the British Navy would force its way into the Black Sea and support the Russians from the eastern side of World War One. It was a total, absolute disaster. And this is what we're
lining up to do. Half the troops died storming the beaches against the Turks.
Yeah, it was months long, absolutely futile, never got off the beach, under the guns, in trenches, being slaughtered, because they had hubris. They thought, hey, the Turks, you know, they're like primitive. They're not even in this century. We have battleships, and we're just going to go in and show these third world, you know, Muslims who's the boss, you know, British Empire. We rule the waves. And it was a major paradigm shift. And it also is celebrated across, not only Turkey, but certainly the Middle East as an example, one of the first examples where one of these Muslim countries stood up to the West, to the empire, and kicked its ass right off the beach. So, yeah, this is terrible. If we now extend this mission to securing the north shore of the Strait of Hormuz, people don't understand. This is like, you know, securing something that's hundreds of kilometers around and deep, all mountains. It would take an effort bigger than Normandy or Okinawa in World War II to pull it off. We're talking, you know, hundreds of thousands of troops that we don't have. So I think what they'll try to do is something like Karg Island, and they'll sell it as, and I've seen people like Jim Hansen on Fox, you know, he's a war booster, so he's on Fox. Yeah, let's take Karg Island because it'll like cork off the Iranian oil exports. Well, Iran's not exporting oil anyway. If you keep an eye on VesselFinder.com, nothing's going through the Strait of Hormuz. And, you know, you can filter the Vessel Finder for just tankers. It's already closed. So it's not like something changes for Iran if we take Karg Island. But if we like, say, that dropped Marines and 82nd Airborne on Karg Island, what they'd be setting up is a Alamo or in 68 in Vietnam, a part of that Tet Offensive was the Battle of Khe Sanh, where Marines were surrounded for like, a month.
It's shooting fish in a barrel.
Right. And in this modern era with Starlink and other video, we'll be seeing, you know, Marines getting rocketed and shelled. And then that will be sold as a lever to take us to the next level.
I was about Israel and others know exactly what they're doing. They're tricking Trump. Exactly. I know the average American, Americans are going to go total war when we see Marines and Army getting slaughtered.
And that's why I don't consider this unpatriotic, what we're doing. I consider it very patriotic. If I knew that a field trip of school children was walking into a minefield, I would be out in front waving my arms saying, don't do it. Don't do it. That's a minefield. You know, this is much bigger than Vietnam. Vietnam is a tenth the size of Iran. South Vietnam, we had 500,000 troops for a decade in South Vietnam, 500,000 in 1968. And you can say, well, Matt, we didn't lose the war. You know, Jane Fonda and the media lost the war. Look, we couldn't subdue. We had B-52 carpet bombing. We ruled the skies of South Vietnam. We ran at will over North Vietnam, had a little bit of air missile defense, but basically we ruled the skies. And as they say, as Mearsheimer says, we won every battle and we lost the war.
Stay there. The end of the old order is coming. There's a lot of jockeying by some of the same power groups to be in control in the future. But you still got the central banks, you still got the big panopticon, AI, surveillance systems, all the big tech is, and they're still going to try to stay in control. But because they're exposed, it's going to get harder.
I'd like to have a conversation for now.
And harder and harder. I haven't plugged yet today because the news has been so incredibly hardcore. But the products really are amazing, and that's how we fund our operations, so I need your support. We have a flash weekend sale today through Monday, March 9th, 50% off methylene blue capsules. It's the very same high-quality methylene blue that's in the tincture. 50% off that when you buy ultramethylene blue tincture. Again, the pills are great for travel. It's the best methylene blue out there. You really owe it to yourself. Tommy Robbins was blown away by it yesterday here in studio. And we have the March mega sale, 40% off on NAD, Ultimate Burn, Life Force CMOS, methylene blue tincture, and more. Take advantage of that right now at thealexhomestore.com.
Coming to you live from the Infowars.com studios in the recaptured state of Texas, it's Alex Jones.
We use the analogy Gallipoli from World War I, where the British went in to fight the Turks, and what happened, the Iranians have been waiting forever across the Strait of Hormuz, the most armed part of the country, for the U.S. to try to take those islands and then the beach to protect the Strait of Hormuz. They are waiting for it. They are begging for it. And now, as I told you a week ago, that was the next move. Now it's confirmed. Axios, the White House, wants to take the shore of Iran, wants to back the Kurds invading from Iraq, and wants to try to send in troops to secure nuclear material. How the hell do you do that when most of it's buried under 30,000-pound bunker-busting bombs? So it is just unbelievable where we are. I want to go to some calls, Matt Bracken, you're going to take over. Describe where we are right now geopolitically, obviously a trap for Trump. And how does Trump extricate himself from this? What's the best case scenario to wind this down with oil already surging in futures markets to $120 a barrel? What that does, the Trump recovery alone, the big bankers want that to happen in the United States. Trump's not thinking second, third, fourth order. He just now, yesterday and today, freaked out over the oil prices. He just now freaked out over Israel blowing up Iran's refineries. He's only thinking one-dimensionally here, Matt Bracken.
Yeah, I don't think there is a way out because, you know, people are saying best case is Trump declares victory, says we've accomplished our mission and leaves. That's not going to end it because Iran gets a vote in when it's over. We don't just get to declare victory and leave because we lose as long as the Strait of Hormuz is closed. That's the big trap. The Strait of Hormuz is closed. Just go to vesselfinder.com anytime. You can zoom out to the whole hemisphere or you can like zoom into one port and every little triangle is a ship that's moving. Every little circle is an anchored ship and you zoom in on it, it'll tell you the name of the ship, what way it's going, its course, its speed, everything. Strait of Hormuz is closed.
It is, and we actually have that Vessel Finder website. Sorry, your Skype, your Zoom broke up. Keep going.
Yeah, hang on. You know what? I kind of did this on short notice. I've got to, next break, I've got to pull the cord out. I just went Wi-Fi only. Let me take a minute and go drag this wire across the house, okay?
Yeah, take care of that. Thanks for coming on such short notice. Let's take a phone call while you're getting ready for that. Sean in New York, thanks for holding you on the air. Go ahead.
Captain Clown Car, pleasure to serve. Mr. General Jones, how are you?
I'm all right. Go ahead.
Great. So what I wanted to bring up is a few things with Trump and the going to war on the ground. I think basically if they use any of those weapons against us, aren't those the weapons that Biden left there?
Your phone's breaking up, bro. Just go ahead and talk right into it.
Yeah, so the weapons that were left behind were left there by Biden, correct?
$80-plus billion dollars in Afghanistan.
Right. So if I remember correctly, I remember when Phil Hartman was killed, they were able to sue the medical people that gave his wife the medicine, and they were able to sue Smith & Wesson for the bullets that were used. So will we be able to sue Joe Biden if anybody gets hurt during this? Plus, I just wanted to bring up, Trump brought it up in that little segment you did about girls being drafted at, 17, 18 years old. I was just wondering if that's really going to still hold. And plus, in New York, we're having this Mondani, Gracie Mansion bombing and everything. Now, half of those people, I would suggest that they were part of it, considering they all went there together. And if that's the case, then shouldn't they all be charged with a conspiracy, you know, for being part of that? And most of them, I got to say, have to be vaccinated. So is there some kind of vaccination control, Neuralink style, graphene oxide controlling their brains at some point? And a food shortage is coming between the weather. And now that cattle has gone from 100 to 400 to 2,500 to 3,000 for baby cattle, I think we're going to have a food shortage soon. So I was just wondering how you felt about that. And thank you for being
our general. That's a lot to respond to. I think you pretty much said it. Thanks for the call. Matt Bracken, you're back. You're able to reconnect your computer. What was it you were about to say?
Yeah, that even if Trump said we are declaring victory and leaving, that will not reopen the Strait of Hormuz. You know, we spent 20 years to replace the Taliban with the Taliban in Afghanistan. Well, we spent a week and all this bombing to replace Khomeini with younger, stronger Khomeini. And younger, stronger Khomeini, we killed his wife, we killed his children, we killed brothers and sisters, we killed his father. So do you think that Trump is in a position to say, I'm not satisfied with who the leader of Iran is, I get a say? He's delusional. So Iran is not going to just, and number one, first of all, they're not going to negotiate, because the last two times we were in negotiations, we used negotiations as a means to do a sneak attack to assassinate people twice, last June and February 28th. So they're not going to negotiate, and they're not going to just say, sure, let's have a halt so that America can build more missiles, get their defenses back up, and come at us again next year. This time, they're going to decide when it ends. And I have to point out, people say, oh, look at film of Tehran, oil rain, they must be getting ready to surrender. No, they're getting stronger. They fought for 8 years, from 1980 to 88. Iraq, which was then an American ally, attacked Iran to take over the strategic waterways, that Karg Island, where the oil comes out. And they had initial success because it was like a blitzkrieg, a surprise blitzkrieg. And the Iranians were still in turmoil from the revolution. So it took them a long time to organize, new army and things like that. Iraq even used poison gas. We all remember that Saddam Hussein gassed the Kurds in northern Iraq. He gassed Iranians. He put gas in Scud missiles. He put gas in artillery shells, gas that America and Germany sent the precursor chemicals to Iraq, saying it's for pesticides. You know, all those mosquitoes in Iraq, they got to make sarin pesticide and mustard gas pesticide. The Iranians remember this. Their look at the world is very different from ours. We're thinking, oh, marine barracks, projectiles, the explosively formed projectiles that they used in Iraq were really mad. They keep repeating this trope. They're like the leading terrorists in the world. They're actually not. But from the Iranian point of view, we sponsored an existential invasion in 1980, used poison gas on them. Saddam Hussein, our buddy then, was the proxy army. And they resisted for 8 years. They were outgunned. They had to use basically human wave tactics, because initially they didn't have any kind of armor, things like that, that we have, that the Iraqis had. So they lost an enormous amount of people in the Iran-Iraq war. Those men, the veterans of the Iran-Iraq war, are now in their 60s. All right, that's like my age. This is the era I grew up in, the 80s. I remember it perfectly, okay? So their history lessons are 1980s. America sponsored Saddam Hussein's invasion to take the most critical oil regions and waterways of Iran. And we resisted for 8 years, and we lost 500,000 to 1 million of our people. They poison gassed us. We didn't surrender. So anybody that thinks that, oh, fire coming out of the sewers and oil rain over Tehran is going to cause them to surrender is out of their mind. It's hardening their will. And remember, Tehran is only one city. It's big. It's like 9 or 10 million people, but it's a very huge and spread out area. When you look at like a crater in a, you know, an area, whether it's Beirut or Tehran or Tel Aviv, which they're not showing video, you say, wow, it looks like total destruction. Yeah, for a couple blocks, but you go a quarter mile away.
Let me ask you this. What do you make of the White House information thinking about using nukes to, quote, make them surrender like the Japanese? Trump saying Friday, I'm thinking about totally destroying Iran. Don't make me do it. That would destroy us politically worldwide if we drop nukes on them.
It would destroy us politically. And let's say you nuke Tehran. Let's say you drop the big one on Tehran and you killed 10 million Iranians. All right. That's like saying if we nuked New York, America will surrender. Okay.
No, you well, are the complete going to opposite. Drop, let me ask Americans. If somebody nuked New York, would that make us give up or get totally pissed?
Or how about this? And I see people, DC Drano, lots of these accounts, Gunther Eagleman, these guys, I don't know if they're paid or what, shills. You know, they're now suddenly sneak attack is a good thing, right? You know, the Japs at Pearl Harbor, they were really smart, caught us napping. That's essentially what they're saying. We're so smart. Those dumb Iranians, they trusted us when we said, oh, come back for negotiations on Monday. Kushner and Witkoff are ready for the next round. You know, the Omanis say things are looking good on Friday. Sneak attack them on Saturday morning and kill the leader, the son's wife, children, 40 of their top leaders. So I'm saying, okay, let's say somebody put a bomb on Air Force One or you know, did something to the White House. If 40 of our top people were killed, would we surrender to that country or would we be so pissed? So even if we nuked Tehran, the people that are in these, because now it's the military regions are now operating autonomously, which they had planned for because they knew that we can disrupt comms. So the missile teams around the Strait of Hormuz, which they haven't even used these missiles yet. You know,
they're now in full authority to do whatever they want.
And right, and some of them have apparently, you know, done things that not with, you know, Tehran's blessing, but they're organizing the comms right now. But they haven't even needed to fire missiles to close the Strait of Hormuz. The insurance companies have done that by basically declaring, you know, it's a war zone and refusing insurance. So Trump last 4 or 5 days ago said, we're going to insure the ships. What? Like basically if a ship gets blown up, the American taxpayer will pay for it. And then he said the U.S. Navy will escort ships through. Well, he dropped that right off the bat because the admirals got to him, I'm positive, and said, we can't escort ships through there. If we put ships through there, they'll be sitting ducks, not only the tankers, but the warships, because that whole region, and I have a map of the Strait of Hormuz that shows the terrain. Well, I sent a bunch of
not to mention old-fashioned artillery.
But, well, aside from artillery and mines and these and speedboat, remember, in the Black Sea, one of the most effective things that the Ukrainians are using are these sea drones that are Starlink-linked in the Black Sea. They've snuck right into Russian ports and sunk Russian ships in port. Yeah, that's the map. Look at that terrain. It's like the mountains of Arizona. You know, they're not the Alps, but like if you've crossed Arizona, New Mexico, you see in the distance, oh, look at that. And the next thing, for the next hour, you're going up and down passes and mountains and canyons. That's the north side of that. All right. Okinawa would be like invading Rhode Island. Okinawa took the U.S. Marines and Army 3 months to do Okinawa. And we had ships ringing the whole thing. Okay. No resupply. Japanese are dug in. Invading the shore of Iran would be like invading the coast of Texas, except mountains. So I think that the
the military planners around Trump must all be part of like this dispensationalist cult. That they logically, militarily, the people in the Pentagon must be ripping their hair out. But if guys like Hegseth are dispensationalists, you know, Third Temple guys, you know, bring it on, Gog and Magog. I mean, half of your callers are like, let's talk about the eagle and the, you know, it's like, come on, anybody is a tool. They're a tool. You know, I think that the people that want to wreck the global economy and do the big bank reset, this is one of those century-long bank resets where they have to completely annihilate the financial system so that they're not blamed for the end of the fractional reserve fiat currency system collapse, which they are to blame. So instead, they'll say, oh, it was that war. They would have done this with the Ukraine Russia war if they could have. Now this is their best chance. We need a huge war, big reset, central bank digital currency or some other scheme like that. But it's, you know, and they're just using
these dispensationalists. The globals are planning to use this to bring in their new world order. I'll take a few final calls and hand the baton to you to get into this in more detail, Matt Bracken. I think you're dead on right now. And again, I'm a Christian. I know you're a Christian. Clearly the way this is being twisted, they talk about how we're going to force Jesus to come back with all this. You have the Antichrist comes to power for years. You have him set up his world government in Jerusalem. Then all this happens. You don't like make God come back now and it all just happens. It's totally insane. Let's talk
every war had people saying it's the Germans or this and that is that. You know, you can go back hundreds of years and they were saying that.
That's why they say everybody's the Antichrist. Let's talk to Nathan in Texas. Nathan, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hey, Alex. First off, I just want to say I've tried every supplement at the store. I've tried all of them.
Thank you.
My favorite's the Optimal Woman and the Colostrum. I take it every day. They're amazing. And then I just want to kind of mention, I just want to bring light to this real quick. If Jake Lang wants diehard supporters to actually pay attention to what's going on in the world and not just sheep that are going to follow him, then what he really needs to do is, I don't know why he won't address the photo of him kissing the wall. Like, just address it. And he's a little bit suspiciously too excited about war in Iran, where our soldiers are going to go die. And I'm a veteran. And I've got friends that are still in, and he's a little suspiciously excited. He said, nuclear heads? You want nuclear heads? What the hell is this guy talking about?
Here's the deal, Nathan. If you just said you want to talk about Jake Lang, we would have gone to you. You said Israel-Iran war. Now, do you want to talk about that?
I mentioned Jake Lang, Israel, and Iran war. And Jake Lang is suspiciously too excited about the Iran war. So I don't know. I just want him to address kissing the wall, and then we can get over it. And he says a lot of things that I like. I think that he gets me pumped up, but for whatever reason, he won't address that. So I'm not joining his crusade until he addresses the wall. That's pretty much it.
So nothing on Iran, Israel war, just.
Nope, just Israel, 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 kissing the wall.
All right. You made your point about Jake, though. Do you have a view on how Trump could pull out of this war, Nathan?
I don't. I think it's horrible. It's extremely nerve-wracking. I tune in every day.
Nathan, I appreciate you. We get it. You're calling about him. Thank you. Got your point out. Thank you very much. Dave in Colorado, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi, you can hear me, right, Alex?
Yes, I can hear you. Go ahead.
Excellent. I am having the scariest deja vu. I keep thinking back or remembering what we were going through in the heart of COVID when Anthony, and we couldn't get Trump to get a hold of the situation. And we kept going over and over and over. What's wrong with Trump? Why won't he do anything? And we kept trying to find excuses because he was the best we could find. I think we're going, he's become the errand boy of the globalists. And I mean, just like with COVID, he is doing exactly what they want him to do. I watched him this morning. Somebody handed him a phone that had something from Epstein, and he said, that must be something that AI created. And I was thinking, that's it. That's exactly it. He's forced into a corner because while he can control the Department of Justice, he couldn't control the Israelis, and Epstein was part of this Mossad effort to bring us to this very moment.
By the way, new Epstein documents got released, haven't hit yet, confirming he was Mossad trained. Thanks for the call. Matt Brackett, what do you make of this? Trump furious at Israel for massive attacks on Iranian oil infrastructure. Do you even believe he's actually upset, like they're saying?
He might be, but I don't think in military affairs he's very smart. I think that he's a narcissist. So narcissists don't think they need to read history books study these things. They think they've just got it. Like, they're brilliant. God made them super brilliant. Because he, in a window of time, he was a great real estate magnate in New York. That, like we've seen with musicians and software geniuses, doesn't mean that they're suddenly, polymath renaissance people with a great deep understanding of everything. So him saying, we didn't want Israel to do that. Excuse me, when you pull a Pearl Harbor, when you pull a sneak attack during negotiations, you don't get to determine how it goes after that. That's why you don't do these things. Also, you don't do them because nobody will negotiate with you. You think Trump and Putin are going to have a Zoom call? When they tried to fix Trump or Putin in position to send drones into his house. Who's going to believe us? It's very short-sighted to blow up the concept of honest negotiations. It's why you don't do it. So we're on for the full ride now. And I think that Trump is being totally dominated by the Israelis, surrounded by Zionists like Hegseth and Susie Wiles. And I think he's high on his own supply that we can just, him saying, I don't accept this new guy Khamenei, like it's up to him. I mean, this is a real high level of delusion. But, when we grew up, you and I, we were mad at the Japanese all the way for decades because of the sneak attack at Pearl Harbor. On American media, they're not looking at it this way, but the rest of the world is. Our people are making the excuse, we've been at war for 47 years, so basically we can attack them any way we want, anytime we want. No. We were pissed at the Japanese all through the 30s. We sanctioned them. We cut off their oil. We cut off their rubber and iron. And their attitude was, you forced us to attack Pearl Harbor. We didn't buy that. We called it a sneak attack. The rest of the world looks at all this disaster unfolding and says, America, you did it. You were led by Netanyahu into this disastrous sneak attack. And it's dishonorable. There's even a war crime. Look it up. It's called perfidy, like a perfidious attack. Like somebody's, let's use the white flag, have negotiations. Then your snipers shoot the other guys. Ha, ha, ha. We're so smart. We shot the guys with the white flag.
About to embark on a great adventure.
President Truman has chosen you and your crew to lead a highly classified mission.
Where do we pick up our escort?
There will be no escort.
All I can tell you is that this cargo can end the war. You can save millions of lives.
You are my crew. and our survival depends on all of you functioning as one unit.
Yes, sir!
A short time ago, an American airplane dropped one bomb on Hiroshima. With this bomb, we have now added a new and revolutionary increase in destruction.
Now I am become death, the destroyer of worlds.
Captain! There's something in the water!
It's a Japanese bomb!
All hands to your battle stations! Brace for impact!
of the old order is coming. There's a lot of jockeying by some of the same power groups to be in control in the future. But you still got the central banks, you still got the big panopticon, AI, surveillance systems, all the big tech is, and they're still going to try to stay in control. But because they're exposed, it's going to get harder.
I'd like to have dodged for now.
And harder and harder. I haven't plugged yet today because the news has been so incredibly hardcore. But the products really are amazing, and that's how we fund our operations, so I need your support. We have a flash weekend sale today through Monday, March 9th, 50% off methylene blue capsules. It's the very same high-quality methylene blue that's in the tincture. 50% off that when you buy ultramethylene blue tincture. Again, the pills are great for travel. It's the best methylene blue out there. You really owe it to yourself. Tommy Robinson was blown away by it yesterday here in studio. And we have the March mega sale, 40% off on NAD, Ultimate Burn, Life Force CMOS, methylene blue tincture, and more. Take advantage of that right now at thealchemstore.com.
Leading a frontal assault on the lies of the New World Order, it's Alex Jones. Rallying patriots worldwide in defense of human liberty, it's Alex Jones.
Yeah, welcome back. And I'd like to continue with what I was sort of saying there at the end. We started this war, okay? The people that are trying to sell that this is like somehow defensive, you know, doing the gymnastics to say, no, we had to do it. The Japanese said we had to do Pearl Harbor, okay? The Germans were so high on themselves that they had done the Anschluss of Austria, walked into Austria, incorporated into Germany. They had backed off the Allies in Czechoslovakia, took Czechoslovakia. After that, it seemed pretty natural that they could just do whatever they wanted. Who's going to stop them? So they on September 1, 1939, that's when, you know, you can go back to like thousands of years, but the war, World War II, most people say, what's the starting date of World War II? It's September 1, 1939. German Stukas start dropping bombs on Poland. They had to make up this BS excuse about Polish soldiers attacking German radio station near the border. It was all made up. It was a complete false flag. Nobody believed it, but it didn't matter. They went through the fig leaf of trying to create like an image of a false flag, but nobody bought it. But the Germans didn't really care because it's like, look, we're going to win. If you win, it doesn't matter how you start the war because we're going to win. Then in 1941, December 7th, obviously, famously, the Japanese attacked us at Pearl Harbor. They took a big gamble because they had to steer a fleet, including multiple aircraft carriers, clear from Japan to Hawaii, where a patrol plane might have spotted it or so forth. But they pulled it off. They felt they had to do it because their window of opportunity was closing. Their window of opportunity because their oil was cut off, their rubber, very important then, and their iron for building ships was cut off. If they didn't do it, they would not ever be able to do it, and they would be subservient to the West forever. So they felt they had to do Pearl Harbor. But when I grew up, you know, in the 60s, 70s, 80s, if you talk to Americans, they would always equate two things, Pearl Harbor and Hiroshima. And do you know what Americans used to say? Don't complain about Hiroshima because you started it at Pearl Harbor. If you start a war, you don't get to determine how the war ends. This is why we tell people, don't start wars of choice. It gets out of your control. The genie is out of the bottle. Pandora's box is open. Anybody that says, well, Matt, we've been at war with Iran for 47 years, or they did explosively formed projectiles in Iraq. Well, we were in Iraq. That's like next door to Iran, and there's a lot of Shias in Iraq. So, I mean, that, you know, that's like getting in the middle of a cartel war and then complaining because different Mexican factions are shooting at you. I'm sorry, we didn't have to be in Iraq. Anybody want to rewind that and say that was a great idea? WMDs, that was all BS. Actually, from the Iranian point of view, and I don't care, you can say, Matt, what are you taking the Iranian side? Anybody that doesn't look at a conflict through the eyes of their adversary is a fool, is a complete fool. If you don't understand where your adversary's limitations are, what are their go-to-war deadline, no matter what, we'll surrender for this, but not for that, is a fool. For example, Japan, after the bomb, Hirohito made a recording that went out the first time Japanese people heard his voice from a polygraph, a disc record that they produced. And then Hirohito said, we're going to surrender to the Americans and just chill out and let them come in. And they did, because of that. That's how that society ran. If Hirohito had said, every Japanese should, down to children, should sharpen a bamboo stick and charge any American they see, they would have done it, because that's that society. Now, in Iran, we could drop an atom bomb on Tehran. We could drop 10 atom bombs on their 10 largest cities. And the missile crews and other defenders that are in that arc over the Strait of Hormuz will be like the Japanese soldiers holding out on the Pacific Islands. You know, there were Japanese soldiers all the way to the 1970s because their last order was don't surrender. Yes, sir, don't surrender. I won't surrender. They had, in the 1960s and 70s, they had to find these guys in Guam and other islands and like find their old sergeant who's like 80 years old and fly an airplane over saying, you know, Private Yoshi, the war is over, surrender. That is the dedication at this point that the Iranians are going to have. And the more damage we do to their cities, the more Iranians we kill, the more determined they will be to never let a ship through the Strait of Hormuz. I've called for years, you know, everybody knows about the Israeli Samson option. If Israel faces an existential threat, we're going to nuke the 10 top Arab capitals. Like, if we're going down, you're going down too. Well, Iran also has a Samson option, but it's an economic Samson option. If you're going to destroy our culture, if you're going to destroy our people, you know, this is a cultural empire. I mean, it's got its own language, history. These are people that are not anything like the Arabs on the other side of the Persian Gulf. It's really important for Americans to understand this, because most Americans just call them damn ragheads, camel jockeys, everybody that's a Muslim over there in the Middle East. They're all the same. They're not. They're as different as Swedes and Italians, okay? They might have, like, at one level a matrix of Islamic religion, but the people and cultures are totally different. Iran has its own water. I mean, it's in a drought right now, but, you know, droughts come and droughts go. But Iran does not depend on desalinized water, for example. Iran produces like 80 to 90% of its own food inside of Iran. They have their own factories to build these rockets and these drones, like these 20-foot wingspan Shahed drones and the 10-foot wingspan type Shahed drones. They have their own engineers. They have their own mathematicians. They invented chess. And by the way, I asked Grok this. Do you know who is the superpower of chess for like forever? The Russians. You know, Russians learned calculus in like, you know, eighth grade. So don't think that because we're Americans, we're smarter and those other guys are never going to catch up. Who invented the Shahed drone? Did America? No. Did Russia? No. Iran did, because they're not going strength to strength. They're smart enough to not try to build an aircraft carrier. We're taking a victory lap because we sank this drone carrier. The drone carrier was like a demonstration vehicle. It wasn't ever meant to confront the U.S. Navy. It's essentially meaningless if we sink the 100 biggest Iranian ships down to like harbor patrol boats. It's irrelevant, because it has nothing to do with the war, the way it's going to be fought. So the Iranians invented the Shahed drone. These things are very sophisticated. I watched Ted Postol on Daniel Davis, Colonel Daniel Davis, a few days ago, the MIT professor. He's got the best analysis of the whole missile war, the physics and construction of these things. So these little Shahed drones have on them essentially like a cell phone repeater. So we'll have another drone in between. It's like, how do they hit the building and know where the CIA are in the exact building? Hit the exact window of the building in Bahrain where the CIA set up its secondary headquarters. It's because these things are sophisticated enough. They don't have Starlink, or they can't depend on Starlink. So he looked at the Shahed drones and the little antenna bumps on them. They're essentially using their own cell phone technology with a repeater drone in the middle so that they can fly straight into an exact window. This makes all the difference. We should have learned this from the June war, when at the big base in Qatar, Al-Uwaida, they took out one of our main satellite uplink dishes. People confuse these uplinks and radars because they both have a giant dish. But the one in Al-Uwaida that they got last June, our media said, oh, to wind up the 12-day war, they fired a couple missiles into the desert near, you know, around Qatar to not hurt anybody, face-saving gesture. And you can look this up. It's in the media again. I mean, you can find these links. They hit one of like the half dozen in the world biggest satellite uplinks. It's like the network-centric war, right? At all times, we have these giant satellites that are going around. Unlike a lot of the movies, they don't just hover over an area to like film it 24 hours a day. Only geostationary satellites much further, like a percentage of the way to the moon, can look at the whole hemisphere and just stay in a geosync orbit. The satellites like our keyholes that have the great, you know, eagle eye view, they're going around the world. So they've got a window and then it's black again, then a window and it's black again. So all of these satellites that are giving, you know, that are linking all of the video and all of the data from our predators and everything else, it's going from the satellites, which are passing overhead, you know, every half hour or so, another one, the thing that's connecting all the military on the ground is that big uplink satellite dish. It's like 40-foot diameter. They nailed one in that, oh, just they just were a face-saving thing. They hit Qatar in the desert. They hole-in-one one. And that was should have been our signal. We're in a new era, folks. This is a huge paradigm shift. And I think there's plenty of people have been writing about it. When this would happen, it would change the world. Second and third tier powers. You can say, all right, Iran's a second tier power. The Houthis are a third or fourth tier power. But if they have these weapons, they can push the first tier powers way back from their coast, way back, out of range, or to a range where their weapons are almost ineffective. And you know, this is, you could almost compare this going back to that Gallipoli thing. The British and French thought, if we bring our battleships in, you know, and we're going to open the Strait of Dardanelles because we're just going to conquer the Turkish side of the Strait of Dardanelles. Those Turks, what can they do about it? Well, the Turks had artillery and accuracy and sank like two British and one French battleship, like right off the bat, sank them. It's like, whoa, didn't expect that to come. Well, now we're in a much more dangerous era because things as small as a drone can take out a warship. These things that they put five in the back of a truck, you know, at an angle, then the box lifts up and they can go off one after the other. Well, it turns out that these can all communicate network-wise. One will be halfway to the target, linking them all, and the others can be orbiting around to come in from other, you know, from the rear directions for a time on target attack. And who invented these? Did the Russians? Did the Chinese? Did the Americans? No, the Iranians did. At the beginning of the Russia-Ukraine war, after you know things were not going the way that they thought, the Russians actually imported these Shaheds from Iran on aircraft. They were, you know, the first couple hundred went on aircraft to Russia. Then Russia began producing their own, and you see these very effective in the Ukraine war because they can do time on target attacks where drones are loitering. They're circling around. Remember, there's a drone halfway that's like linking them. And then the ballistic missiles come in, defensive interceptors are fired, and then the drones attack. So this is extremely sophisticated. Even the Americans are copying one now. We've captured them, and now we have one called the Lucas drone. That's basically a ripoff of the Russian Jiran, which is a copy of the Iranian Shahed. So anybody that thinks that because they're Iranians, we're automatically going to trump them in technology is an idiot. And these retards on Fox that are like, we sank their Navy. The Navy, what never mattered. Their Air Force never mattered. Look at the video, the Ted Postal video. I think it's on Daniel Davis's Deep Dive channel. We've got the video now of these major ballistic missiles, the big ones, the thousand, you know, the ones that can hit Israel, they're just coming out of the dirt. There's no launcher truck. There's no silo. It's just miles of desert, and the first charge blows off the dirt, and then here comes a ballistic missile. I mean, do not discount the intelligence of the Iranians. Do not fall for the propaganda, which is, Matt, we've been at war with them for 47 years. Don't you remember Beirut? Don't you remember the explosively formed projectiles? Well, they'll say, we remember poison freaking gas. We remember you gave the chemicals to make sarin to Saddam Hussein to gas our people. We remember 500 Scud missiles fired into Tehran. We remember that. And we fought for 8 years and didn't surrender. So when I see Trump saying that the Iranians blew up their own girls' school, or that the Iranians are like cutting the heads off children, I'm just thinking he must be really in the thrall of these dispensationalists, you know, these Third Temple people. We've got to bring the Third Temple back. So yeah, I think there's a great chance. The biggest false flag of all time will be somebody blowing up the Dome of the Rock, which is the, on top of the Temple Mount in Jerusalem, somebody blows that up and says Iran did it, that it was an Iranian ballistic missile. And so the reason that Alex does these shows, the reason that I'm on, is to warn people, because the news of these things gets around the world. What did Mark Twain say? A lie gets around the world before truth gets its boots on. So if you wake up and it's like, oh, somebody blew up the Dome of the Rock and Israel says it's Iran, it won't be Iran. Trust me. It'll be the false flag of all false flags. Because one of the ways that you can look at this whole conflict is that Israel is setting up a conflict between Shia Islam and Sunni Islam. So Sunni Islam is Saudi Arabia, that side. Shia Islam is Iran, but also a strong minority in, they call it the Shia Crescent, from Iran across Iraq, Syria, Lebanon. That's called the Shia Crescent. Well, Israel has successfully blown up that corridor. While Assad was in power, you could truck weapons, on road, essentially, from Iran to Lebanon, no more. So in that sense, Israel's much more secure today than they are, in 5 years ago. But if Israel succeeds in creating a war between Shia and Sunni Islam, say with a false flag blowing up the Dome of the Rock, remember, the Dome of the Rock wasn't built last year. It was built like a century after Muhammad. It's one of the oldest buildings in the world. Now, to the Israelis, that doesn't matter because King Solomon, the first temple, second temple, all of that. So if that building right there is blown up, it's World War III for sure. And the Israelis will say, oh, Iran did it, to try to get Sunnis and Shia all over the world to go at each other. You can see a spinoff of this right now, and I can't even understand I haven't really studied it closely enough, but Pakistan and the Taliban in Afghanistan are at war. They're like going at it hardcore right now. And there's a big Shia-Sunni element to that. So Pakistan is really on a war footing. And guess what? Pakistan has a treaty with Saudi Arabia. So if the world is convinced that Saudi Arabia is under attack by Iran, there's a chance that Pakistan enacts this treaty and goes in on the side of Saudi Arabia attacking Iran now from the other side. So we're talking World War II material, because going back to the Stukas attacking Poland, September 1, 1939, the Germans attack Poland. And guess what happened like 2 days later? Britain and France declared war on Germany. They weren't attacked. Poland was attacked. Czechoslovakia was taken. Austria was taken. Then Poland was kinetically attacked. France and Britain jumped in because of a treaty. So Pakistan might jump in because of a treaty, right? And now we're talking the whole Middle East in flames. Forget about oil. There won't be food moving. Countries like Egypt and Pakistan import, 80% of their food. If there's a sea war where people are now, and we started this precedent too, we sank that brand new Iranian frigate, which is like a little mini destroyer. It was on a diplomatic mission in India at a fleet week kind of a thing. So no doubt we knew it was leaving port. It's not on a war footing. It was between India and Sri Lanka, Ceylon, 3,000 kilometers from Iran, and we torpedoed it. So we've opened up the Pandora's box of what they used to call in the world wars unrestricted warfare, like as in the Lusitania, right? Unrestricted warfare. If we go to unrestricted warfare now, where your merchant ships, our merchant ships, everybody's merchant ships are fair game, then we're going to be into what Michael Yon calls the PANFA war. Pandemic, famine, war. They go in, those three are like the horsemen of the apocalypse, PANFA war. Because when people are starving and their water plants are busted and the refineries aren't working, and you have modern societies that depend on supply chains and just-in-time shipping and ships coming in and trains coming in, when that all stops, there'll be mass starvation. When there's mass starvation, there's pandemics. This can be a total apocalyptic scenario, even if nukes aren't used, because the whole world now is in a just-in-time system. And I always go this, it's like this, okay? If I just drive a nail through one part of this watch, I only broke one sprocket, but the whole watch stops. If we go to any type, we're on the way to unrestricted warfare right now. That the Strait of Hormuz being closed is like a knife held against the jugular vein of the world. That's where we are right now. There's a knife against the jugular vein of the world. Trump can say, we're done. You know, we're declaring victory and going home. But the Iranians might say, the hell you are. I hope you got a plan for oil. And if the next step is the desal plants, the Gulf states import 90% of their food and make like 99% of their water. They are so vulnerable, it's unbelievable. They will go straight into starvation and dehydration at the next step of this war. And what Israel did with the refineries, raining down oil on Tehran, I wouldn't be surprised anything that happens next. And certainly expect terrorism in the USA. When you begin a war with a sneak attack, you don't get to say, but whoa, we're only talking about airplanes bombing Iran. We're not talking about people in America throwing bombs. That's not fair. Sorry, when you start a war with a sneak attack, you don't get to say how the war goes. Germany and Japan learned that lesson. Don't start wars. Anyway, thank you for Alex to have me on. And, you know, I've got these books. It's why people pay attention to me, because I wrote these things. And a lot of them, a lot of the things that I've been writing about for 20 years have been happening and are happening. So, you know, you can get these books from me or from Amazon. Anyway, I've got the, you know, I'm on X, Matt_Bracken48. I post a lot of this stuff, but we're in extremely dangerous times, folks. And I sure hope calmer heads prevail, but I think it's out of our hands now. I don't think Trump can even if he woke up and said, I made a big mistake, Iran will determine when this war is over. They can take a lot more suffering than anybody else in the region. They have food security. We've blown up their refineries. You think they're going to surrender? Not a chance. Anyway, I'll see you next time, and let's all pray for a good outcome.
Has InfoWars not delivered? In Gladiator, he chops up the first four guys when they throw him in the ring, or you know, in the arena, and he says, "Are you not entertained?
Are you not entertained?"
Well, I would say to you, are you not satisfied? Have we not delivered in the fight against the globalists? You bet on the right horse, and I'm asking you to continue to bet on us as the info war continues on, regardless, as we refuse to submit to the tyrants. But the reason this is such a win-win or a non-zero-sum game or a 360 win, the term I coined over a decade ago, is because everybody participating supports freedom, supports the fight against tyrants, the fight for team humanity, against the globalists, and you get incredible products at the same time. So if you haven't tried ultramethylene blue or our bovine colostrum or our CMOS or our Shilajit, these are all incredible products available right now at thealexjonesstore.com. And if you're going to buy anything on the site, you become a VIP for $30 a month, cancel any time for free, and instantly $40 is put in your account. The second you click in a VIP, when it recurs each month, instantly $40 goes in. So you make $10 to spend on top of the $30 you spend. Special deals, special offers, and with one click in your profile, you cancel anytime for free. So it's a very light commitment, and you get special deals on everything else. So anybody buying anything on thealexjonesstore.com should be a VIP, so make sure you do that. You have until the 17th of March to take advantage of the March mega sale at thealexjonesstore.com. This is one of the biggest sales of the year yet, up to 40% off store-wide, 25% off on the shirts, on the hats, 10% off on things like the collectible knives, and up to 40% off on supplements like ultramethylene blue. And the more you buy, the more you save. So take advantage of the March mega sale right now, running until the 17th at thealexjonesstore.com, and be the reason we'll always stay on the air. Again, I salute you and thank you. Take action now.
Yeah.
receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.